All right, I'd like to welcome David Sparks, Mac Sparky, to the podcast. David, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure.
How long has it been since we talked? The last time I saw you was at Macworld, like over a year ago.
Wasn't it this year? Didn't you go this year?
No, I didn't go this year.
I saw you then at World Domination Summit last summer.
Yep, that's true. That was the last time we saw each other. But Portland's a great city. And speaking of great, your the most recent episode of Mac Power Users was awesome because it was task management, right?
That was a tough one, really, because there's so many different ways to do it. The last time we covered that topic was 2009. And the whole landscape has changed since then. And we've got a lot of really positive and some negative feedback on it because there's so many different pet systems for task management, and there's no way to cover it all in an hour and a half.
Well, it was interesting because I finally got mentioned on Reddit for the first time, which I guess is a badge of honor, but it was not exactly the way I was hoping to get mentioned, is that there was a comment about all the productivity and task management apps and how come they're all Mac centric. And they said, you know, on Mike Vardy's podcast, all he talks about is the Mac stuff, which I don't do as much. You would be doing that because it's Mac Power Users.
Yeah.
But do you find that that people are getting, there's so many things out there now that people are like, there's a severe backlash against productivity apps in general. Are you finding that?
I don't know. I think there's a lot of options. I know that on the Mac, around circa 2007 to 2008 or 9, it was a wasteland. Mm-hmm. There was just nothing good for task management. And there was all these, you know, the whole thing with, you know, turning Omni Outliner into a task manager was because there wasn't anything better. And now,
kinkless GTD, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And now there's just so much great stuff. I mean, and that was the point I tried to make in the show, is that I think it depends on your needs. I mean, you can get by with very little if you can pull it off.
Right. And when we did the OmniFocus setup, I know that I was called out for switching from app to app to app and testing them out. I mean, and one of the things, and obviously I still have OmniFocus too. I'm using something different because I do a lot of collaborative work now, which again, like you said, it's depending on the needs of the user. And it's nice to have this embarrassment of riches now. And I think no matter what platform you're on, really.
Yeah, that's true. Although I think, and this is something that I say too often probably on our show, is that, you know, the real benefit of being on the Mac platform is the Mac developers. Mm-hmm. And there's these great, we just did a show with Guy English who needed a really great app to annotate images, so he wrote Napkin, and it's like an amazing application. And that's just another example of these guys and gals on the Mac making amazing applications, and I just don't see that on the other platforms.
And once extensibility comes into play with iOS 8,
isn't that amazing? It's coming in. It's like we're all about to hit the lotto, and most people don't even realize they have a ticket in their hand.
No, exactly. It's so, and I mean, I'm still on the 4S because, you know, in Canada, we had those 3-year contracts that finally got dipped to 2. So I'm actually going to be able to upgrade now, finally, because my contract's done. And I can't wait because, I mean, my 4S still runs fine, but when a newer, snappier iPhone will handle all of the workflow needs that I'm going to need to take full advantage of. And I'm seeing now with an app like use Dispatch. I want to talk a bit about Dispatch. That email app, it couldn't have existed, just like Drafts or anything, couldn't have existed, you know, even 3 years ago, right? You know what I mean? Like, and no one would have thought to, I mean, we know email is a problem, you know, in terms of task management in a lot of ways. People spend too much time in there and they don't actually move, you know, they use their email app as a task manager, which, you know, unless you're really, really disciplined, won't work. And then you've got these ones that are coming along like, you know, Boxer, Mailbox, Dispatch, Triage, and it's changed the game in such a great way.
Did you see Dispatch now prints to PDF?
Yep. Yeah.
Crazy.
I know.
Crazy. When are they going to make an iPad app for Dispatch?
I don't know. I mean, I'm lucky that I've got the Mini. So when I blow it up, and I like the fact it blows it up automatically now. You don't have to press the 2-time thing. It just opens it up as the large version. It doesn't bother me as much, but I think that it's got to be, I mean, Clean Shaven's got to have it on the horizon because it's a killer killer app. And I mean, now with the additional, I mean, what they've got, the cab app in there now, like you can call a cab, you can send directions. Like, it's just insane what you can do. And then drafts again. I just finally got editorial, by the way, on my iPad. I don't know why I waited so long. I don't know. I have no idea why I waited so long. It's crazy awesome. But that's the thing, is there's so many apps that you can use, and then they work in conjunction with one another, that are, that's going to make your workflow experience that much smoother, right?
Well, and the difference is, right now, to make all that stuff work, you've got to be kind of a scientist mm-hmm. about it and plug things together. Whereas with what's coming with iOS 8, it's going to just magically happen. And the smarter developers are already, you know, building these hooks in, so you're going to be able to use a you know, function from application one throughout the operating system. And then you think about special keyboards, and it's you know, the story about iOS 8 is going to be the apps that come out on day one and day 10, and you know, in that period, it's going to be like a new gold rush in some ways.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think it's going to cost me a bunch of money, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's going to cost all of us a bunch of money. Can you give like a Cliff's Notes version of how you are able to balance family, your law, and, you know, doing the awesome stuff you do with, you know, iBooks and all the other stuff you're working on? Like, how do you make that all jive?
I don't have a cloning machine, but the, you know, some of it is not as sexy as you think it would be. So when they hear he's a lawyer, they're like, oh, he's a lawyer. So they think, you know, every lawyer works 80-hour weeks, and I don't. Mm. I mean, very early in my career, I clerked for a federal judge, so I had I externed for a federal judge. I guess you got to use the right term, but I had a lot of opportunities for big firms that paid lots of money and wanted you to work lots of hours. And I grew up very blue collar, and I'm like, you know what? I don't need that stuff. So I wanted to be around with my kids. So I've always worked in these small firms where we kind of set our own clock, and, you know, I drive a Ford, not a Mercedes. You know, I don't make the big bucks at the day job, but that gives me enough time. And I'm not saying I work full time, but I don't work crazy hours like some lawyers do.
Right.
So that's one of my secrets. Another of my secrets is my kids are much older now. You know, my youngest is 12, my oldest is 17, and we spend a lot of time together. But when you have little kids, it is all consuming. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no way I could be doing this stuff if my kids were, you know, 2 and 7 instead of 12 and 17. And so I have a little bit more time that way. I really love all this Max Parkey stuff I do. I mean, it really, I get an endorphin from it. I just love doing it. I love making friends like you, Mike, and I love making stuff that people will enjoy, and I love hearing from people that kind of their lives get a little bit better because something I did. I mean, that's the ultimate high. So, you know, I get that from it, and I plod and I pick away. I mean, I think some people think this is a shtick that I do, but it's not. I mean, I've never been, you know, particularly smart. It's legendary in my family how hard it was to teach me to read. And, but I've always been a hard worker, and, you know, I pick something and I just, you know, bite the elephant every day, and hopefully I consume it at some point. And that's how I do it. So it's just, you know, picking away at things and being kind of the right point in my life that I can have time to do these things. It all kind of combines together. And then I use all kinds of weird hacks, like using drafts and dictating. And like, I'm working on my next field guide now, and I realized that I hadn't written anything on it in 2 weeks. So all week this week, I've been driving back and forth to work. It's a half hour commute. Rather than listening to podcasting, I've been dictating the next book. And, you know, I just looked tonight, I've got 5,000 words in this week, which feels a lot better. It feels like I'm making progress again. And I just stole some time in my commute.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Is that a lot of people, and I guess the other thing is, you put out a lot of stuff, but like when you put out a field guide or something like that, clearly there's a launch and all that stuff. So that old adage of there's nothing, you know, everything is new on the internet, you know, the appearances could be that, you're working on these things on an ongoing basis, but people see it coming out consistently, like, wow, how is he doing? Well, you're planning it over months and months and months. It's not something that, you know, you just go to, you know, get up and knock it out in a week, right?
Yeah. In fact, because I've got all these different things taking my attention, nothing gets done that quickly. Right. It always is a march.
So your kids are 5 years apart. My kids are 5 years apart. Only mine are 4 and 9. So,
yeah.
What should I do? Should I just stop because they're still so young? Or the one thing that works for me is that Colton's finally realizing that the door knocker, like when I have, when I was at a hotel, there's one that like the door knocker that says, you know, do not disturb or whatever. I put that on the door and he recognizes that means no one can, you know, daddy can't, I can't be disturbing daddy. Although he's probably the only 4 year old on the planet that knows what a podcast is. Because he's like, daddy's doing his podcast. We can't be loud right now. It's quite hilarious.
Well, it's, you know, but those days are precious and they will be over before you know it. So just make sure you make enough time. It's always a challenge. Every year I speak in Chicago at the American Bar Association, and it's very prestigious to be on that faculty. And there's a bunch of people there that I really adore, who are just really smart, clever nerds and lawyers. And it's the nicest group of lawyers I spend time with every year. And I always look forward to it. And then I had promised my 12-year-old that she has a thing for school. And I had promised her, like at the end of last year, that I would do it. And I found out today that I should have realized earlier, but I realized today that promise falls right smack in the middle of the Chicago conference. So I called the Chicago people and I said, I'm really sorry. I just can't go this year. And I told them, I promised something to my daughter. And, you know, if I'm going to be, I don't want to get you a tag. If I'm going to be, you know what? To somebody, it's going to be to you guys over her, you know. And but that stuff's always a challenge.
Well, yeah, and I think that the thing is, I have the fortunate ability to work from home, so I see my son, like my son and my wife and daughter have gone away for the next 3 days. They've gone up island to a little beachside resort because school ended 2 weeks early here in June because of a teacher strike. So I lost 2 weeks of work because of it to a certain extent. So my wife said, hey, I'm going to take the kids up. You go ahead and do some work here for 3 days. And in my mind, I'm like, I wanted to go. Because they're going to really cool, you know, they're going to be sitting on the edge of the Pacific Ocean. But I knew that this was important. My daughter and I, we're going to probably go to San Francisco together for the Dad Summit in January, because she's always wanted to go to San Francisco. And I said to my wife, well, what if I bring the kids and you know, you stay home and you get that time? And she's like, you want to take the kids to San Francisco? Feel free. I think that it's all about, I think those tools, and I think this is, I mean, you talk about this, you know, regularly, even without saying it, is that these tools allow us to make those choices. They allow us to say, okay, they make those choices easier, I guess, to a certain extent, right?
Yeah. I mean, the argument, every 6 or 12 months on the internet, somebody writes the argument how things like, extensive task management like GTD or OmniFocus or whatever the flavor is, actually prevent you from doing creative work. And there's always somebody that's got their story about how they got into one of these systems and they never got anything done. And then they dumped the systems and now they're so productive. And I don't agree with that. I think that
I don't even buy it. I don't buy it. I think that it's fleeting. But sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think having systems and tools allow you to make time to be creative. And,
that John Cleese talk, right? You need time and space to make great things happen. Like you can't, and the only way you can create time and space is by having a framework or a foundation that allows that, right? You can't just expect it to show up.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that on the task management show that just went up last week, because I get weekly emails from people saying, hey, you know what, because I, you know, OmniFocus, for however it happened, I mean, they're a sponsor of our show, but long before that, I was kind of an advocate of the product because I just think it's so useful. But I get emails from people saying, well, you know, I look in my task manager and it's just so full, I can't get anything done every day. I wake up and spend 2 hours getting it organized. And And the point I have to write back to them, in fact, I wrote a blog post called, I think, Task Management Insanity was the name of the post. And I say, you can't. You're right. If you've got that many tasks, you're never going to get anything done. I think that the trouble that a lot of people have is once they get these automation tools, they don't appreciate, you know, the commitment and the obligation that comes with everything you write into a task manager.
No, they figure that the tool does the work for them.
Yeah, and it's really hard. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hard because you wrote something down in there and you said maybe you interpret that as a promise you made to yourself that you would, you know, that you would go to France. But all of a sudden you realize, I don't have time to go to France.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Patrick Roan and Schechter and I had a great conversation on workflowing about, you know, when I was talking about don't just ship, deliver, because I think just like in Box Zero, that's been kind of bastardized by, you know, the Seth Godinism of just ship it has been totally taken out of context. And now people are just figuring that if they throw things out there, then they've shipped it. It doesn't matter how good it is. And you're an example of somebody who does not just, you put stuff out there, but you deliver it. You put a lot of attention and detail into it. You just don't throw spaghetti on a wall and see what sticks. But Patrick was talking about how he's starting to use his calendar as, in no uncertain terms, as kind of the task management component, because basically everything that, unless it's put into a time slot, it's just a wish. And I don't know, how do you feel about that? Because you and I think, I mean, I come from that school of the only things that go on in a calendar are the things that, the agreements you either make with others or with yourself. I think that if you start to throw everything on your calendar, then nothing stands out on your calendar.
Yeah, it's always kind of hilarious when you see someone who has calendared every minute of their day. And I think it's an interesting exercise, you know, to go through if you want to calendar your commute and calendar your lunch break and your potty break and calendar, you know, the time you're going to spend gazing at your navel and all, you know, some people do that. And I'm curious to see whether they can stick to that. I know I can't because my day often involves brush fires that need to be put out that I didn't know existed. I can tell you that at the beginning of the week, and we kind of got started on this in the show last week, but I don't think I really verbalized it very well. But at the beginning of the week, quite often I will do the big rocks and look at my tasks, my big tasks for the week, and I'll block out sections of time to do them. And for me, that's quite often early in the morning. And by putting that on the calendar, it helps me, you know, kind of avoid the usual morning productivity porn that, right, you know, is RSS and posting to Max Barkey or whatever. It allows me to say, okay, I'm here. There's nobody going to be here for 2 hours. The office is my own. And now I can just really work without interruption. And that feels pretty good.
Right. What do you think, and I don't remember if you, I don't think you covered this, at least I don't remember you covering it. What do you think about these task management apps that are social? You know, the ones where it's almost like crowdsourced, to a lack of it. You know what I mean? Where you get the applause. What do you think about those?
I don't really buy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like the, I have not, kind of famously on our show, I've never really been a Facebook user. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, I tried Facebook, and then all of a sudden, all these people from high school that I wasn't friends with them wanted to be my friends. It just was weird. And so just recently, my wife got me to sign up again for Facebook because there's some family stuff that I was just missing.
Right.
And then slowly, then I made friends with Gene McDonald. And then, you know, all of a sudden, I've got all these hooks going into the Apple community in Facebook. And it's kind of like this existential crisis. Mm. And I've been watching Facebook, and it's not any of our Apple friends, but actually some old friends of mine. And I know them pretty well. And I read the Facebook post, and then I know the person. I'm like, this is all BS. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not even that person. And I feel like kind of the social task management could easily fall into that trap.
Right.
It's like, today I'm going to spend 2 hours working on a cure for cancer, when in fact you're going to be sitting on the couch with your hand in your, you know, in your belt and watching Doctor Who.
Right. Right.
Eating Doritos.
Yeah. It's Facebook's fascinating in that respect too, because the other thing you see is you see people airing dirty laundry on there too, which is like, you do know that that is not yours anymore as soon as you put it on there. It's pretty apparent. But that, what and Lyft. I mean, I like the concept of it. I like the habit building components that you see and stuff like that. But I'm not a fan of the hey, I'm going to commit to this and the whole world will see it. And if I don't do it, then public shaming public shame may be too strong a word, but that will keep me honest or that will keep me going. Do you use any kind of habit building apps and secondly, do you feel the same way about like the kind of the crowd in those kind of apps?
Yeah. Well, I think that the whole social element of it, there's two sides of it. The one is shaming. Like, I need you guys to shame me. I need the threat of public humiliation in order to do something. And I have a problem with that. It feels kind of unhealthy to me. Mm-hmm. And then there's another side of it where people who do it just because they want to show off how great they are and how they're doing, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
Either way, I just could never do it. I mean, I've had apps that play with it, mm-hmm. but I've just never been. I don't know. I just feel like I would be. I don't want to put out there that I'm trying to floss my teeth twice a day.
Right.
It's just I don't feel like anybody cares, and if anybody does care, that's just weird.
Well,
and you're
already being. I mean, with that task management episode, you're like, you know, you're on that strange side of you know, like being. A little bit quirky with that too. So all of a sudden you start throwing that stuff out there and it's like, how often can you track this stuff? If you're putting everything out there, then you're spending more time monitoring than doing, right?
Well, okay. So that's the one side of it. The other side of it is habit apps, I think, are a great idea. I actually wrote an article about this from Macworld a year or two ago, and I have been using Faithfully one called Habit List, which has a really nice design. And I do floss my teeth twice a day, and I do track that. And I have medication I take, and I track that. And I have, you know, meditation practice, and I have these things. And it honestly, because I'm a geek, the fact that I'm quantifying it sometimes is what I need to push myself through another day.
Yep.
Sometimes I'll wake up and say, well, you know what? I'd rather just lay in bed and, you know, watch something on my iPad. And I'm like, well, you know what, though? I've gone 32 straight days doing this habit. I'm going to get up and do it the 33rd day. So it's a self hack, but I would never imagine really sharing that stuff.
No, those are self-contained. I use full is the one I use. And the reason I like it is because I get to see it. I get, you know, the words that I want to write per day. I get all that stuff. But it doesn't get shared to the general public. It's for me and me alone.
Yeah,
yeah. I think that I mean I get it, and I like the. Some people need it. Some people need that stuff. It's just like, do you journal? You journal, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Use day one for that. I'd imagine. Yeah, same here. I journal every day, and most people are like, why would you journal every day? I'm like, to me, it's why wouldn't you?
I was just reading somewhere. I don't know who. I just read recently someone who said if. I think it was a Google talk where they were talking about, they were teaching programming at some university. I think it was Stanford or something. And the teacher's assistant put a teddy bear outside his office door. And he said, before you come into me with your programming question, you have to first fully explain the question to the teddy bear. And apparently it cut down the number of office visits by half. Wow. Because the process of stopping and verbalizing something that's on your mind, a lot of times you come up with your own solution.
Right.
So I think diarying works the same way. And then the comment they made during the talk was, you know, that would probably work for psychoanalysis too. If everybody talked to a teddy bear, they wouldn't need as many shrinks. I don't know if that's true or not, but no, but
I like the concept because I will journal, and the journaling is here's what happened today. And the thing is some people, well, how many times do you journal? How long is your entry? I'm like, I don't go that granular. I just need to make sure I do it every day. And when I do it, it's like, here's what went right today. Here's what went wrong. And if any, in that case, on both sides of the equation, And then, you know, here's what I'm looking forward to tomorrow. And, you know, good night journal. You know, it's kind of like,
yeah,
it's
really to a certain degree, it's therapeutic.
Absolutely.
To get it out. And now, do you have intentions for your children or your wife or your great grandchildren to read it someday?
I do.
See, I'm not sure I do. I've never even, you know,
I guess I have it there. Let's put it this way. It's there if they want. And I actually have a written journal that I occasionally write in as well. But the day one journal, it's there. If they want to read it down the line, they can. I'm big on keepsakes. Like, I've got my wife, we have a storage area above in our hallway closet. It looks like it's basically, it looks like you could store a dead body in it. It's the, and that's where all of my mementos of when I was doing comedy and all the, like, you know, all the magazine, like, I keep all that crap. I think I got that from my mom. My daughter is now doing it as well. Apparently it took 3 hours to clean her room while I was away in Texas because of it. I have, let's put it this way. I haven't ruled it out, but it's not, I mean, I'm not sitting there going, you know, I need to, this, I better be conscious of what I write in case my kids read this someday.
Yeah. See, I'm the opposite. I don't keep anything to a fault. But I was thinking about that. I mean, I've been doing this diary now for a while, and my thousands of people know about it because I talk about it on the podcast and other places, but my immediate family actually has no clue that I'm doing it, and I don't have it password protected. So I guess if they ever got into the computer, they could read it, but I've never actually told them about it. And I sometimes wonder that if I told them, oh, I'm going to make this great diary you can read someday, if it would change what I wrote in it. And I suspect it probably would. So I've kind of intellectually refused to even go there. See,
I've never actually told them about it. I don't think.
I
think my wife, because she doesn't see, because it's actually something that's in my task manager. Like, don't forget to write in your journal, right? Like, it's one of those repeating tasks. And I don't think she really knows about it. Although she knows that the journal exists, because the other day I was using Slogger for a while, right? But I got tired of seeing all the things that would show up in there that really weren't.
Yeah, it's like, too much.
It's too much. Yeah, I didn't need to know that my Instapaper queue was slowly growing and growing and growing. So yeah. I removed it. But I looked, and I've got almost 1,000 entries in this thing already. And I'm sitting, and my wife's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm just killing some journal entries off that don't really, like, all these automated ones." And she kind of went, "Oh, okay." Like, it was very, very innocuous. So I think that's how it's come up. And yeah, I mean, it's just like 1Password, right? Like, she knows that there's, which I guess is good. I mean, you've probably done the same thing, right? Where my wife knows that if something was to happen to me, 1Password, the 1Password thing is in a safety deposit box. She knows how she can get access to it. And boom, there's no trauma about, okay, look at all the 1,000 things that Mike's logged in for. I need to get access to them.
Yeah, we've got that set up too.
Same thing with the day one journal, right? I mean, it'll be in my will. You know, I've got a journal on day one. If you want to read it, go ahead. If you don't, you don't. But it's not going to be something that I think, for me, it's the journal is for me. The journal is for me to look. I mean, I look back at some of the stuff, and it's pretty amazing. You know, I mean, you look back a couple of years, and I think that reflection is, I mean, you review regularly. Like, your weekly review is pretty granular, I would say. At least that's my opinion of it.
Yeah, it's a daily review.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas mine is pretty traditional, but the reflecting on even just in my journal, and I actually should probably put a task saying, hey, you know, every month go back and look at the journal, because it's kind of like a monthly review to a certain extent, right?
Here's a trick.
Sure.
When you finish a significant project, make a journal entry about that.
Yeah, I should do that.
And then maybe even a month later, after you finish a big project, go back and journal it with a little bit of time between you and completion. And you'll have a lot of insight on things right after you finish them, and then after you had just a little bit more time that will be gone in a year.
That's a good suggestion. And you know what? I don't tag my entries very often, so those would be the ones I would tag. So I could just look at some point in time, just type in that tag, and all those entries would show up over time.
Yeah.
That's a great suggestion. David, I don't want to take up too much of your time. This has been awesome. Where can people find you when you're not busy, you know, just doing everything.
If you go to MacSparky.com, you'll find just about everything. If you're interested in the podcast, go to MacPowerUsers.com. They've got their own website there. But MacSparky.com has the books and the blog and all the other stuff.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, David, for being on the show today.